Merkle Media.
Flashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to January 12th, 2021. The needle and the damage done. If you're looking to convert some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible precious metals like gold and silver, or maybe your IRA and 401k, talk to our sponsor, Tony Arterburn, over at Wise Wolf. Go to www.macroaggressions.gold. Oh, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How are you doing? Thanks for checking us out. I know you've got a million options out there. Flattered that you would spend your time listening to this little show. It means a lot to me. Can't do it without the amazing support of our sponsors. As you know, 2020 showed you better get your act together, better get yourself prepared. I don't know, 2021. Do I have any reason to think it will be much different? I'd say err on the side of caution. Get yourself prepared in advance. That's the reason why we have a really great relationship with My Patriot Supply. If you go to our website that they set up specifically for us, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, then anything you buy there, they'll give you $100 off of a 4-week supply of food, which is phenomenal. There's free shipping on orders $99 or more. They have all kinds of stuff. It's not just food. I mean, they've got all the food that you could possibly imagine, but they also have, you know, water purification and first aid kits and survival items and water filtration and air purification. I mean, there's all kinds of things in there. And if anything, I mean, listen, just go take a look. See if there's anything that jumps out at you. If you want to make the decision, go ahead and buy it. It supports our show. We appreciate that. It helps you as well. It'd be a shame if you listen to all this crazy, all of us tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists that were talking about how things are about to get real, real iffy, and you didn't do something about it. Your family would disown you, maybe. I don't know. So go to our specific website, preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and see if there's anything on there that appeals to you. And I'll tell you what, as a side note, if you're interested or online at some point, go to Rockfin, R-O-K-F-I-N. My channel is there. I've got a channel on Rockfin. It's an interesting batch of people there because they've got, it started with like the wrestling. I don't mean like MMA. I don't mean like Hulk Hogan wrestling. I mean like MMA wrestling. Or, you know, traditional wrestling and MMA fighting and all that stuff. That's how it started. But there's this new component called Free Thinking Media. And they've done a really good job of going out and getting some popular hosts to start a new channel on Rockfin and create brand new content specifically for Rockfin. So if you like Whitney Webb, you can go see Unlimited Hangout. Jimmy Dore's got a channel there. Jason Burmis, Sam Tripoli has got two shows there. Conscious Resistance is there. Lee Camp, Isaac Weishaupt, Richard Medhurst, Graham Elwood, Propaganda Report. They've been on here. Last American Vagabond, they're on there as well. Jamie Deluxe. We love Jamie Deluxe. Slow News Day. So Truthzilla. Truthzilla's on there. Forbidden Knowledge News. I mean, a lot of the people that I like are there. And I've got this channel. So check it out. It's a good source. They've been very clear with us. They're not going to be censoring. And we're going to hold them to that as well, because we're going to talk about some crazy stuff. And, you know, what's crazier these days than what we're seeing with the vaccines? This is a real polarizing topic. And I've done shows about vaccines before, be they sort of these monologue shows or conversations with other people, or even group conversations on the Union of the Unwanted shows that I do with Sam Tripoli, Ricky Verandas, and Midnight Mike from OBDM. We've had, you know, Dr. Scott Jensen on. We've had Del Bigtree on. We've had several doctors. Dr. Brian Hooker, who was part of the Vaxxed movie, he was a main part of the Vaxxed movie, has been on. This is a real thing. There is real concern about vaccine-related damages. The mainstream media, the big pharma complex, and a lot of your friends and family would prefer that you not talk about this stuff, because it's very difficult for them. It creates problems for them trying to sell their products. Your doctor, your pediatrician, who you probably like and trust, who takes care of your baby, who probes your baby and makes sure, you know, when things go wrong with your kid, you think the first call I'm going to make is to my pediatrician. A lot of them don't know about the vaccine history. They just don't either, you know, and that there's a number of reasons for that. One could be that they're busy, though that's a lazy reason. Could be. But part of the reason why these doctors don't know about this is because they're not taught this through the system, through the medical school system, through the, you know, through their roles as they transition from school and become part of the medical community, as they, you know, train in hospitals or, you know, work on ER units or whatever it is that they do to you know, before they go into their own practice, they never get the sorts of deep dives into the vaccines, because the industry is financed by big pharma. The medical education industry, med schools. You might think that they're, you know, I mean, obviously some are better than others. There's clearly that. But you might just assume that you know, they're all different from each other, because one's at one school and one's at another school, and there, you know, maybe some of the information is the same, but the way they teach it and the way it comes out, you know, that's why people are like, oh, I have a Harvard educated, you know, cardiologist. I mean, I have a good friend of mine that I grew up with and went to boarding school with, who is a Harvard educated, Johns Hopkins educated heart surgeon. Okay. So look, do you want discount heart surgery? Probably not. So there is value in finding doctors that are qualified, and we mistakenly assign a value to their qualifications based on what school they went to. Like, if my buddy from Harvard / Johns Hopkins heart surgeon guy is, you know, if you've got a bad ticker and you're interviewing guys and you get him in a room, and then you get another guy who's like, oh, I went to the University of Philippines at Manila Community College and got my 3-year degree in heart surgery. You'd be like, I think I'll pass on that guy. And rightfully so, right? You want to make sure that you have got the best and brightest for you. So we make that assumption that the school that you went to is an indicator of the level of knowledge that you have. I mean, it's preposterous if you think about it, because everybody's different. And sure, look, some people have more intellectual horsepower than others, and they're going to get into Harvards and places like that. But just having Harvard on your resume doesn't make you a good doctor. It doesn't make you good anything. It just means that you're able to get into the school for whatever reason and stay in the school, though they have great inflation. But that's a different story. Anyway, the idea that these doctors aren't molded and shaped into the version of doctors that we see today is kind of silly to think that that's not happening, because, you know, it's, think about your relationship with school, how you went through school and how you've got, you know, you were told, I have to, you know, memorize this. This is going to be on the test. If you memorize it and regurgitate it properly, you get a good score. Okay. So when the higher your grades are, it might be an indicator that you're really good at following directions and giving the teacher what they asked for, which is regurgitating the information back to the teacher. So you could be good at that, but that doesn't mean that you're good at analyzing the information. It doesn't mean that you've actually taken a look at the information, understand how it all works, understand if it's true or flawed, and or anything like that. So somebody that has graduated from med school, to me, it reminds me of me going through biology class. I know what they're teaching me. I know what questions are going to be on the test. I know what answers they want. Do they want to debate about vaccines? No, they do not. That's not going to be asked on the test. Now, when you get into medical school, you are heavily influenced by the pharmaceutical industry. They finance and fund all of these schools. Well, I shouldn't say all of them. The majority of the schools. There is a big pharma component to it. And that is because they say this is the industry that you're going into. You might as well know how the industry you're going into works. This is how it works. We're going to explain to you how we do things. So this isn't illogical for big pharma to be involved in it. And if they were up to only good things, I might not even have a problem with it. But because we know that there's massive cover-ups going on in the pharmaceutical industry about the very questionable safety of some of their products, well, then you understand that in medical school, at least some of the times, they are magnifying some components of the success that they've had through big pharma medicines, and they are minimizing the failures of others. And not talking about that. If they sat down with all of the students that were in their, you know, third year of medical school and said, one of the classes you're taking this semester is vaccines. And we're going to talk to you about the history of vaccines. We're going to talk to you about SV40 being put in the vaccines under Dr. Olscher and at Tulane. And which SV40 was simian virus 40. It was a monkey virus. It was monkey AIDS that was put into, or monkey cancer that was put into vaccines. And then what do you know? All these people started getting cancer. It's really disturbing. But so, you know, if they were teaching classes that gave you an honest history of that, or talked about, they talked about the introduction of the 1986 law that is, that was introduced into the United States, which gave immunity to pharmaceutical companies for their vaccines. That it might be important to talk about the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, because one of the things they say, the reason why this was put in place, which eliminated lawsuits. Product liability lawsuits by the consumers towards big pharma. The reason that they did this was to ensure a stable market for big pharma. And by stable market, they mean we don't want you to get sued. We're tilting the tables in your favor because you bought some lobbyists who then in turn bought some congressmen and changed this. And Reagan signed it. And in anything governmental, as you probably have figured out, that when you take the name of it and just invert it, National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. Yes, this is going to ensure that we no longer have childhood vaccine injuries. Yeah, we're going to ensure that by what? Indemnifying the big pharma companies so that you can't get sued for their product liability? Let me ask you a rhetorical question here. If I made it mandatory for you to buy 78 versions of one of my books before you could even go to school, how much of an incentive would I have to make that the best book possible? I mean, it would be up to me. It would be up to my internal compass to guide me about whether or not I wanted to try hard and give you, I mean, if you're going to have to buy 78 copies, I could either think of it two ways. Either I'm going to make it the best book you've ever bought 78 copies of, or I could be like, why don't I just put, you know, 50 pages of dick jokes and call it a day? I mean, you guys have to, you're forced to buy it anyway, right? So Big Pharma is the one that is in charge of making sure that their vaccines are safe. Yet they're mandatory under the vaccine schedule that the CDC sets. And I think it's important for people to realize that the CDC sets the schedules for vaccines, and they also profit from them, and not just a little bit. A lot, to the tune of over $5 billion a year. So you see, the CDC owns over 50 patents on the vaccines that they put on the schedule. So think about this. I mean, this is really sort of a good example of my book, making my book mandatory, because the CDC sets the schedule for these vaccines and says that the, you know, you've got to take all 78 of these and more. By the way, there's 200 or so more waiting, you know, in the wings to become mandatory, to become part of this. So the CDC sets the schedule for these vaccines. And then what do you know? Some of the vaccines that are on this mandatory schedule happen to be the vaccines that they have the patents on. Isn't that interesting? Wouldn't that be information that you think might be useful when analyzing how you're going to feel about the CDC or Big Pharma? But you're never going to hear that on the nightly news. I mean, you may catch Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking about that from time to time. When he's allowed to go on, what, maybe Tucker Carlson's show? That's it anymore. He's not allowed to talk about this. So, you know, we've got to do a better job collectively of doing our homework into these things. When you start to hear about a rush to market vaccine, like the Modernas and the, you know, and Pfizer's vaccines, rush to market experimental vaccines that are going to come and save the world. My question is, save the world from what? What's the trade-off here? This virus, and I'm going to be very generous in my assumptions here. But according to what the CDC has said, is that even for the most compromised of immune systems, in the age ranges that are most dangerous and you know, compromised, there is a 99.74% survival rate and a median death age of 80 years old. Those are their numbers. If you read that article that came out during the summer, late summer, I don't know, maybe it was August or September, talking about 169,000 dead in America from the coronavirus. If you find that article, go down a couple paragraphs till you get to the part where the CDC has to, where they write in there, in this article, yes, there were 169,000 dead, but in actuality, only 6% died from coronavirus. And the 94% the other 94% died with coronavirus. And on average, 2.6 comorbidity conditions, which may include cancer, may include heart disease, and may include getting run over by an 18-wheeler. So we have to be better about unpacking the information that is presented to us and not just going off the headlines. We all do it. I do it myself. It's a shitty habit to be in. We've got to be better about that, especially when dealing with anything coming from the mainstream media. We should know better than that. But the people that are out there saying to you, 300,000 people have died from this, man. What are you talking about? You're killing grandma and all this stuff. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You need to read the whole article, because the 300,000 dead is a byproduct. It's the extension of the 169,000 dead. It started with 169,000. Then I think it went to like 240. Now it's around 300,000. But nobody that's going to quote that back to you, that 300,000 are dead from this, they didn't read the article. They did not read. I don't know if it's in the article that says 300,000 dead, to be clear. But I know for a fact it's in the article that says 169,000 dead. That if you go down a couple paragraphs, it literally says that only 6% of them died actually from coronavirus. So what are we talking about? 6% of 300,000? That's 18,000 dead people. Thoughts and prayers, okay? to be fair, not happy that 18,000 people have died. But 18,000 people doesn't sound like a pandemic to me. Sounds like a rounding error, to be totally honest. I mean, how many other things can we find that have killed more than 18,000 people over the course of the year? I mean, lots of things. Overdose deaths, suicides, you know. So I'm not trying to marginalize those that died from this. I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm simply wanting to put this in the proper context and compare these numbers in a way that, you know, is comparing apples to apples. Because you can find these interviews with people, you know, the man on the street interview. It's like, oh, excuse me, come over here and let me ask you something. How many people have died from coronavirus in the United States? And people are giving answers like 11 million. And that's the media's fault for that. It's 100% the media's fault. And we have to be better at statistical analysis. Okay, so let's just work this out in our heads here. You have a virus that's coming to get you. It has a survival rate of 99.74%. For the most feeble of the herd, you then decide, you're then trying to decide whether or not you do something or do nothing for it, okay? So you can, we know what the option of doing nothing is. Just say, well, I don't think this is that big of a deal. If I was at a poker table and I had a 99.74% chance of winning, I'm going all in. I'm not worried. Versus doing something about it. Now, I'm always in favor of being proactive, but with whatever we're facing. But I'm only hearing one option here. I'm only hearing the vaccine. I'm not hearing vitamin D3. I'm not hearing magnesium. I'm not hearing zinc. I'm not hearing eat healthy. I'm not hearing get exercise or get out in the sun. I'm not hearing any of those things. The only actionable option here that I'm hearing is the vaccine. So let's make it a choice between doing nothing and taking the vaccine. What are our odds? Well, they're impossible to calculate, to be honest with you, because we don't know what the vaccine is yet. We don't know if it works. We know that we watched a nurse 17 minutes after taking it fall over, and then all the investigative journalists pretended like nothing happened there. And we're like, oh, well, she faints from the pain all the time. This is normal for her. She took the shot 17 minutes ago, dummy. She's having a delayed fainting reaction from an injection 17 minutes. Stop. Just stop it. You're embarrassing yourself with that ridiculous line of thinking. Look, there's a lot of people that have dug into it and looked into this lady and have found death reports for her. I can't confirm that, but I've watched the videos of them going online and finding, you know, the death certificate for this person. Look, so it's a possibility, but we've got an experimental rush to market vaccine that's being presented to you by a pharmaceutical company in Pfizer, which is a convicted felon. They have been fined billions of dollars for things such as price fixing, faking their... Well, this is the big pharma industry in general. I'm not going to just single out Pfizer, though they're guilty of all these things as well. But the industry as a whole, faking tests, price fixing, all sorts of lying, devious practice, you know, they're guilty of all of these things. They have products that kill people on the regular. Every big pharma company is a convicted felon. Okay, the major ones, let's just say. I can't, to be clear, I can't speak for every single smaller operating one. But every one of the publicly traded big pharmaceutical companies are convicted felons. They've all been found guilty in court of felonies. Of course, nobody's gone to prison for it. That never happens. They just pay fines because they don't know what to do with when it's a corporation-wide edict. You know, I mean, I know what I would do. Take one of the CEOs of Big Pharma out into the street and hang him, right? And if you were to do that, I think that would send the message pretty quick that we're not tolerating this anymore. This is an industry that has left carnage in its wake. Do you know what the three leading causes of death in the United States are? Heart disease, number one. Cancer, number two. The American medical industry, number three. Big Pharma is a huge part of this. So, you know, people think that the big pharma industry is a savior because they make medicines that come in and help them, right? And so it's a touchy subject because it depends on what your relationship is with the pharmaceutical industry. I'm a very healthy person. I don't need them. I don't take any medication from them. I've never been admitted to a hospital. I'm knocking on wood as we speak right there. You know, but I've been fortunate. I've been fortunate, but I've also been proactive in my health. I work out all the time. I eat healthy. I do these things for myself, not because I saw a commercial. I feel like it's better for my body if I behave in this way. So my relationship with Big Pharma is not that they're a savior. They've never come in and saved me, but I do acknowledge that they have come in and saved a lot of people. So when you're having the vaccine discussion with somebody and you're talking to them about how evil Big Pharma is, you know, their relationship with Big Pharma plays a role in their opinion on it as well. It plays a huge role in this. So remember that when you're trying to have these conversations, because if you're somebody that has an artificial pancreas because of the amazing technologies of science and everything, then your relationship with the pharmaceutical industry is very positive. Whereas if you've got your 19-year-old son still wearing diapers and banging his head against the wall because he took an MMR shot at his 2-year marks when he went in to see his pediatrician and he's never spoken and he's been nonverbal, then you have a much different relationship with Big Pharma than somebody else does. So I think, you know, if we're fighting online with people, you've got, what, 240 characters if you're on Twitter to get your point across? It's kind of hard to unpack the history of the pharmaceutical industry there. It's kind of hard to have that debate. You have a quick conversation with somebody you meet, you've got, what, 90 seconds to get your point across? You can't unpack the whole Rockefeller's involvement in the creation of the pharmaceutical industry and the role of people like Fauci and Bill Gates. I mean, you know, you're sort of forced to condense your argument into a minute and a half. Picture it like going on like the nightly news and getting interviewed for a segment. Man, you've got 2 minutes tops and you've got an announcer talking over you, you know, and if you're saying something controversial, they'll just cut you off or cut your mic or make it go to static or whatever. So you're forced to try and have these debates in a very unfair time frame, a limited amount of time to unpack this story of Big Pharma, which requires a much longer conversation, you know, something like a podcast, right? So if you like this and you think it might wake somebody up, please click the little share button and share this out to your friends and family or acquaintances. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Let's back up a while. Let's back up like 100 years. and try and figure out where Big Pharma came from, because I think that's important for understanding where it is now and where it's going. So the Rockefeller family is who started the pharmaceutical industry. They didn't start it because they're doctors. They didn't start it because they're altruistic heroes. They started it to use it as a different industry, to create a new industry for their petroleum products. The medicines that you take, if you notice, they don't look like fruits or vegetables or anything like that. You know, they're pills. They're synthetics. They're made from petroleum. They're petroleum-based products. And the Rockefellers were in the oil industry, the petroleum industry. They sold petroleum for a variety of different industries. One of them that was new to them was Big Pharma. They were heavily influential in creating that. And we can say what we want about the Rockefellers, the family. There's lots to say, and it's not good. But I will say this. When you've got a lot of money and you're evil, but you have a business mind, you can accomplish quite a bit. And the Rockefeller family's entry into Big Pharma changed it. It changed medicine in this world. It changed it for the entire world. They are responsible for that. Some good things came out of this. Some bad things too. But what's, I think, is important for people to realize is that there used to be a time when the CEOs of the big pharma companies were all MDs, medical doctors. Now they're MBAs, Masters of Business Administration. It's a business, okay? The doctors at the top, they're not there anymore. The businessmen are running the show. And when you incentivize and monetize somebody's health, you are on a slippery slope, because there's no money in the cure and there's no money in death. The money is right in the middle, treating patients, treating the symptoms, never really getting at the root cause of it. So you have to kind of, you have to remember that this is a business. It's a big business, and there's a lot of money at stake here. But if you have to sort of detach yourself from like your way of thinking or my way of thinking about this, which is we're good people. We're not out to hurt everybody else. We're not trying to make money at the expense of hurting other people, especially if somebody comes to us to help us fix our health. You would think like, oh, like it's gross to screw people over in general, but oh, when you're doing it with their health, it's just, you know, it's so permanent. If you don't have your health, it's the only thing you can focus on. When you're sick, you can't think of anything other than getting yourself well. And so they prey on that. And so you have to think about this you have to put yourself in the mindset of somebody that's a little bit more focused on business at the expense of the person's health. Somebody that's, I'm not even going to say that they're evil. I'm just going to say that they're focusing on spreadsheets. They're looking at an Excel document and putting in the numbers and seeing how everything works and how they can make changes to that in order to make their profits go up. Now, I'm giving you the sanitized version of it. Where the real psychopaths come into play is they sit in those boardroom meetings and they go, well, we had a pretty good quarter. You know, we had a pretty good year last year. We made X billions of dollars. But if only we had more customers, and if only we had those customers longer, then we could really make some money. So you know that there was a conversation that happened in one of these boardroom meetings where they said, you know, maybe we can create customers for life. Maybe we can make people just sick enough that they're always dependent on us, but not so sick that they're dead. Maybe we could create a system where, I don't know, everybody's dependent on us for all of our products. And how could we do that? Well, we could. What if we injected them with something that would make them sick over the long term? But we did it under the guise of protecting them. That's where the vaccine industry got hijacked. They create customers for life with toxic vaccines. And the younger, the better. That's why they want to get it in your kids as early as possible. Ask yourself this question. If the United States medical industry was so good at protecting children, and the reason why we were so good at protecting children was because of our early vaccine programs, then why do we have one of the highest infant mortality rates in the world? That is incongruent with logic. That sounds a whole lot like we're just saying that vaccines help. Because if you look at the evidence of where we are in terms of the health of our children, we're at the bottom. We're not at the top. Oh, we have vaccines. They protect everyone. Really? Then please explain to me the explosion in autism. Please explain to me why we're so high on the infant mortality rate. How? If these vaccines are making everybody so healthy, why are we all so sick? Now, to be fair, it's not just the vaccines. There's a lot of other components to this. There's, you know, genetically modified foods and poor nutrition, bad, you know, the diet pyramid, the food pyramid is a disaster. And there, you know, we have pollutants in the air. There's a lot of things that are contributing to this. I'm not trying to say that the only thing that is a problem for us is the vaccines. It's not. But it is a component of this. And the autism epidemic is not imaginary. And for those that think that there's no ties to autism from the vaccines, well, first of all, I can show you a vaccine insert where it says it lists one of the side effects is autism. So there goes that argument right there. But secondly, go talk to one of those mothers. Go tell her that it's all in her head. That yes, she had a beautiful, smiling 18-month-old daughter who went in for a wellness check, got her batch of vaccines, and never spoke from that moment on. Banged their head against the wall. Lost eye contact. Became nonverbal. Had to wear a diaper their entire life. Had to wear a helmet their entire life. Couldn't be around loud noises. So they wear headphones everywhere they go. Tell them that they're all imagining this, that there's no correlation between this. I dare you. Watch the reaction you'll get. This is very real. And Big Pharma has billions of reasons to keep this silent, which is why they created the VAERS court, the Vaccine Adverse Effect Court. That is a joke, an utter joke, if you're talking about actual justice for people. They won't, if your symptom is autism, you're automatically disqualified. They won't hear your case. Half of this VAERS court, this rigged kangaroo court that is funded by 75 cents on every vaccine that consumers pay for, 75 cents on every vaccine that you've bought, hopefully you didn't buy, but you know, over the years, goes into a pool. And from that pool, they paid out $4.2 billion to settle damages from vaccine-related damages. You know, the vaccines that don't cause any damages, they paid out $4.2 billion. That's more money than the Catholic Church has paid out to settle rape allegations around the world. And we know what disgusting pedophiles they are. And that is understood. And yet the vaccine industry, through the rigged court, has still paid out more money than the Catholic Church. Let that sink in. So you have to put yourself in this really unusual position of trying to think like a psychopath. Think like somebody that is just simply motivated by money at the expense of everything else. And it leads you to this systemic problem in Big Pharma. Because they know they can create customers for life with the vaccine programs. We're sick. I mean, we're physically sick, but some of us in this world are mentally sick too. You know, Here's the thing. If you're wrong about the vaccines, there's no turning back. You're screwed forever. You can't be wrong about this. This is so important for people to understand this, for people to get educated. You don't get to get in your DeLorean and go and get up to 78 miles an hour and go back in time and undo what you've done to your kids or to yourself. You don't get that luxury. This will haunt you for the rest of your life. You cannot be wrong about this. If I'm wrong about a quote that Zbigniew Brzezinski said about the New World Order, I can deal with that. I got it wrong. Oh no, there goes my reputation. If you're wrong about the vaccines, your life is over. Your life as you know it is over. So it begs the question, why are you trading? Why are you gambling with your life over a virus that you're going to recover from? A virus that has not killed 300,000 people in America. It has killed 18,000 people in America. Not my statistics, their statistics. They're the ones that like to play with words. They're the ones that like to play with the headlines, the mainstream media and big pharma. They're the ones doing this. But when you read the article, like you should, they contradict themselves in the last line. So what are we doing here? Why are we so scared? Why are we allowing ourselves to be so scared? This is not we're not approaching this from a position of strength. We're approaching this from a position of fear. And if you ask me what the mainstream media's job is, I would say their job is to sell fear. And that's what they've been doing. That's all they've been doing in 2020. Lying their brains out, crafting fake narratives, and trying to scare the shit out of you. So it's important for us to remember the relationship that the media has with Big Pharma. It's imperative that we know this, because you make this assumption. Well, let me back up. This audience doesn't make this assumption, but a lot of people out in the world make the assumption that if there's an important story, let's keep it vaccine related. If there's an important story about the dangers of vaccines, I would have seen it on my nightly news by now. There would have been plenty of talk about that. And there's not a whole lot of talk about the dangers of vaccines on the nightly news. So therefore, it's not happening. You guys are making a big deal out of nothing. You guys are being irresponsible in telling us that the vaccines are dangerous. There's a lot of people out there that think that. They make the mistaken assumption that if this was real, it'd be on my nightly news. And it's never going to be on your nightly news. Not in the current system that we have. Not in the current system where 60% of the ad revenue for the nightly news comes from Big Pharma. Watch it tonight. Turn on NBC News tonight with Lester Holt. Turn it on. Count the Big Pharma ads you see. Count them. This is our, you tell your family you have homework tonight. You have to watch NBC News. Count the ads. And then ask yourself, if Lester Holt went off the rails tonight and just decided to do a ending monologue about how dangerous vaccines have always been and that there's real questions about it and that they paid out more money to settle damages than the Catholic Church, even though they got Congress to make it impossible for people to sue them, you don't think that he'd be in Jeff Zucker would be, no, Jeff Zucker's at CNN. Whoever the equivalent of Jeff Zucker is at NBC News, some asshole, I'm sure. You don't think that the president of Pfizer would be in his office threatening to pull $1 billion worth of advertising the following day? You bet your ass he would. And Lester Holt would be yanked off the air. So it's never going to happen. And if you're waiting for the validation from the mainstream media in order for you to believe the things that I'm saying, you will be waiting forever. You'll never hear it. It'll never come. It's not allowed to come. Now, you may get Lester Holt off air at a bar somewhere when he's had three wild turkeys and he's ready to talk. Maybe then, you know? Or if he's hanging out with Richard Quest, smoking meth on New Year's Eve in Central Park, you know, maybe they'll tell you, yeah, the vaccine thing is dangerous. But lights, camera, action at the news desk, never happen. Which is the same reason why we're not going to hear anything about who Fauci really is. Why haven't we had the expose on who this guy is? Oh, I know who they say he is. He's a trusted doctor. Yeah, whatever. Then why is he in a photo with Bill Gates Sr., George Soros, Ted Turner, and David Rockefeller? How many bloodlines do you see in this picture? That's like the, it's like if these guys started a band, it would be, their band name would be like the D-Pops or something, you know, something really shitty like that. These are depopulationists. These are eugenicists. Bill Gates Sr. took over Planned Parenthood from Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger was running a sterilization project there. She was trying to get rid of the Negroes. This is Bill Gates' dad, of course. It's a eugenics operation. That's the one photo you don't want to be in. You don't want to be like at a cocktail party and like, hey, want to come jump in a picture with Bill Gates Sr., George fucking Soros, Ted Turner, who by all accounts people think he created the Georgia Guidestones, and I can't prove it, but I can't prove he didn't either. And David Rockefeller. I mean, was Ted Bundy not around for this? Or he might have been in jail. So this is Anthony Fauci. He's a eugenicist. He's a pathological liar and a shrimp of a human being too. I fully expect him to be like on Dancing with the Stars. Can't you see that? I mean, I can totally see it. They're trying so hard to sell this thing. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. I just don't know why you have to have a public relations department for your massive pandemic. If it's a massive pandemic, it should be obvious on its face. You shouldn't need all of the additional sales pitching. Like if I have to hear Alyssa Milano tell me to wear a mask one more time, I'm going to drive my car off a cliff. You know what I mean? As she's wearing a crocheted mask. I mean, look, nobody's ever accused Alyssa Milano of being bright. And I would be able to laugh at how preposterous this whole event has been if it wasn't for it being so goddamn serious. Because the direction that they intend to take us through this vaccine is truly nightmarish. I just interviewed Harry Vox, and he explained this to me in a way that makes a lot of sense. The vaccine is a backdoor into your immune system. It really is. That's how he put it. I think he's right. It's a backdoor into your immune system, which anybody that they allow access to can then tinker with your body through this. This is really dangerous. And if we had an actual pandemic with bodies stacked up on the sidewalks, you know, like those World War II in color documentaries you watch, you know, where it's like Poland, 1939, and like they just had the shit bombed out of them, and there were like bodies stacked on sidewalks, in carts, you know, people just dead on the side, literally like an old lady like dead on the sidewalk, you know. If that was happening here, the Poles in 1939 didn't need a marketing campaign to say that they were getting bombed. They knew it. It was evident. It was everywhere. It was undeniable. This, very deniable. It's very deniable that we're in a pandemic. I can deny it all day long. Numbers don't add up. Changing the definitions of what a pandemic is? World Health Organization's changing the definition of what herd immunity is? Once again, why would you do this if you had an actual pandemic? Well, the answer is, of course, because you don't. And so in this frustration that we have of not being able to have a 90-second conversation with somebody and not being able to unpack this whole history of things, you know, it puts us at a severe disadvantage unless somebody has the patience to sit down and listen to something like a show like this or James Corbett's Medical Martial Law documentary that he put out in March of 2020 or a variety of shows out there that get into these very into this topic. I'm not the only one talking about this. There's many people much brighter than me that know the ins and outs of this. But it's like, but how can I convey who the World Health, you know, people are saying, well, the World Health Organization says X, Y, and Z about this pandemic. And it's like, before I address that, I have to talk to you about who the World Health Organization actually is. Do you know that? Because you're going to quote to me, well, the WHO said this, this, and the other. And I'm just going to say, do you know who they are? Well, yeah, they're the World Health Organization. Yeah, yeah. But do you know where they come from? Do you know who started them? Do you know who controls them? Do you know what their history is? Do you know anything about them? Because it sounds nice that you have an organization that goes around the world that's devoted to people's health. But that's just the name. That doesn't mean anything. It's under the umbrella of the United Nations. It's a Rockefeller-founded project. The World Health Organization was busted putting sterilants in the tetanus vaccine in Kenya. Think about what kind of asshole you have to be to do that. Sterilizing the women in Kenya through your vaccine program, which obviously they said, this isn't going to give you, this isn't going to sterilize you. It's going to cure you, to prevent you from getting tetanus, which, you know, to be fair, you may, I haven't been to Kenya. I know some people from there. Maybe tetanus is a thing, you know, maybe you're walking around, maybe more people are walking around barefoot in Kenya than in the United States. And from time to time, they step on rusty nails and tetanus is a big thing. Okay, maybe. Then why the sterilants? Now, the World Health Organization denied it at first, but they later admitted to it and went on to admit that not only did they do it, the program had been in operations for 10 years, and it was not limited to Kenya. So when your kid's just back from college and they're going to lecture you about you need to wear the mask, the World Health Organization says this, that, and the other, you just have to say, sit down. Sit down and shut up. Before you lecture me about what the World Health Organization said, you need to know who the World Health Organization actually is. Then I will decide whether or not I'm going to trust them. You mean trust the people that sterilized the women in Kenya through a lie and did it for a decade? Sorry, I wouldn't trust them to tell me what time it was. I'm certainly not going to take anything from them, be it mask-related protocols, vaccine schedules, how fearful I should be. I'm not believing anything they say. How many bird flu scares have we had? How many tainted vaccines has the World Health Organization pushed on the third world? Because, you know, we want to take care of the less fortunate first. By killing them? But by sterilizing them? Is that what you want to do? By giving 47,000, by Bill Gates giving 47,500 kids polio in one village? By giving 500,000 kids polio in India? You know, before you start telling me what these experts say, you better know who these experts are. Bill Gates is not on your side. Yes, he wears a sweater vest, and he seems kind of feminine and geeky and harmless, but he is a dangerous individual. And if you don't know who his family is, and you don't know what his role in this whole operation is, and you don't understand that the only reason why this guy gets good public relations from the media is because he's bankrolling all of them. Not my opinion on it. You can go to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation website and find all of the places that they've donated money to. In the media organizations, it's hundreds of them. And here's a reminder that the MS and MSNBC stands for Microsoft. Now, that partnership has broken up recently, but I would suspect that there's still cover for Bill Gates there. Look, the money is in the treatment, not in the cure. The money is in keeping people sick and constantly needing medications. Why do you think CVS will give you a $10 gift card for coming in and getting the flu shot? Because it's going to make you sick. And you're going to be right back in there 3 days later buying a bunch of cold medicine from them. Better get your flu shot. They're getting subsidized from those flu shots too, by the way. You know, so, you know, when you talk to people about this, it's very important that you know what you're talking about before you have these conversations. Because if you just go into it with, well, I heard vaccines are bad, you're going to lose that argument. Because the other person is going to, because you don't have your, facts together. It's imperative that if you're going to have this conversation or debate against somebody, that you know what you're talking about. Because the default setting is going to be set to you looking crazy, because, and you being anti-science. The irony, you know, for those of us that know how anti-science the vaccine industry really is, to be called anti-science is just preposterous. But it's so important for us to approach this. You know, I'm not trying to sell somebody vaccine. They're trying to sell people vaccines. They have a vested interest in this. I'm way more objective. I'm not getting the vaccine. My family's not getting it. I will have the conversation with whoever wants to have the conversation about it. If they say I am genuinely interested in knowing more about this, and once again, a disclaimer of all disclaimers, I'm not a doctor. I don't think I need to be to understand big pharma fuckery when I see it. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. Okay. Let's be very clear about that. But the people that want to debate you about this will have you believing that you can only, if you're not a scientist or a doctor, you cannot have this debate. You're unqualified for this debate. And I totally disagree with that. Because the thing is, I'm also not compromised by big pharma the way doctors and scientists are. I didn't go through 8 years of Rockefeller-funded medical schools. They did. I didn't get constantly barraged by big pharma sales reps in my medical practice. They did. They're in that world, unable to escape it, unable to be objective about it, unable to bite the hand that feeds them. And let's be honest here. There's another component about this with the doctors. If you're a pediatrician that's had a practice for 25 years and you've been giving vaccines out like they're candy, you may not want to examine this topic very carefully for fear of what you may discover, that you were part of the problem all along and you were either ignorant to it or too lazy to dig into it, or maybe you suspected it all along, but your cognitive dissonance kicked in and you didn't allow yourself to ever really examine this. So there's a lot of reasons why people will pretend like the vaccines are safe and effective and there's no downside to them. And they will demonize you as being anti-science or an anti-vaxxer or whatever sort of term they can use to try to discredit you in some way. But those won't affect you if you know what you're talking about, if you have the information, if you know your history. I can debate anybody on this topic, not because I'm, you know, super smart or anything, but because I have a deep understanding of the different tentacles. I mean, when you write a book called The Octopus of Global Control and you lay out control structures, I have a whole 1/8 of the book is about the science and how it gets controlled and how easy it is to control science. Science is never settled, man. Not when you've got this much money filtering into these industries. They can change settled science. So, you know, my advice for talking to people about this, my first bit of advice is know your audience, okay? You're not going to, if you believe that the information that you've come across or that I've presented in terms of questions about the safety of vaccine is legitimate, you will approach your conversations with people as you trying to help them out and save them. But they may not view it the same way. So be very careful about this. They may see you as coming to destroy their health with unfounded rumors that you saw on the internet. Now, there are unfounded rumors on the internet, a whole lot of them, but you also have to recognize that tactic when you see it, which is to just try to blanketly discredit everything on the internet. Not everything on the internet is a lie, okay? It's not all conspiracy theory. The time for theorizing about Big Pharma's role in vaccines is long gone. This is analysis. This is analyzing these conspiracies, not theorizing about them. They waived their right for that when they went and got Congress to make it impossible for you to sue them for their fraudulent products. They don't get to do that and call you a conspiracy theorist at the same time. I'm sorry, they just don't get to do that. They waived that right. They took away our rights to sue them, but they waived that right to marginalize us, to try to marginalize us by calling out their overt lies and their dangerous practices and their and how tight they are with the regulatory agencies. I mean, Julie Gerberding, the head of Merck's vaccine division, came from the CDC, where she oversaw the vaccine component of the CDC. Do you understand how this works? Science is settled, right? Is the science settled as long as there's Julie Gerberding's out there that could be paid $5 million a year to go to work at Merck or whatever she's getting paid? I'm not sure. She's probably getting $5 million worth of stock, I'll tell you that much. This is a real thing. And so it's not our imagination. We're not conspiracy theorists. We're not anti-science. We're pro-science. That's the reason why we've come to these conclusions. Not that we're anti-science. It's the exact opposite of that. You know what's anti-science? Doing vaccine tests, and I'm putting that in air quotes, but not doing double-blind studies where you take one batch and give them the vaccine and take an equal-sized batch and give them a placebo. They haven't done that. Now, that's science 101. They haven't done it. Why? Because they don't want you to know what it would say. Vaccines are a gold mine for the Big Pharma. It's like, as Paul Offit said, who sold his rotavirus for over $180 million, it's like winning the lottery. Well, good for you, Paul. Because for everyone else, it's Russian roulette. Thanks, everybody. If you like this show, please share it. Follow me on Twitter, @macroaggressions. Take care.